everyone, and welcome back to another episode of What the Forensics. My name is Rebecca, and I am joined here again today by the lovely Journey and Nicole. This week, we've all found some dumb cases that were just committed by some dumb people that we wanted to share. We just thought this would be a really fun, kind of as lighthearted as you can get with true crime kind of episode. And Journey also has a fun forensic corner for us at the end, so be sure to stick around for that. I would like to note that there is a listener's discretion because there's descriptions of murder, but that is pretty common for our podcast. And I would really love to just get right on into it. So I think our first case study today will be coming from Nicole.
Yes. So my first one, it kind of just like starts with stupidity and then trickles down. Just after midnight on June 17th, 2021, troopers spotted two cars parked on the side of a road. One had, one was a Subaru with its hazards lights flashing, and then the other one was an Audi. The troopers thought something was amiss, and, you know, maybe someone, you know, the hazards light being kind of the universal symbol that maybe something's wrong. So they pulled over to check things out. As they pulled over, they kind of heard rustling in the woods beside them. They took a peek over, and 17-year-old Joshua Gamble, he was found lying on the ground a little ways into the woods, but not harmed. He had blood on his shoes, a plastic-coated work glove on his left hand, and a blood-stained key fob to a Subaru. So he was just kind of like hiding from these cops, hoping that he wouldn't be found. As they detained him, because they saw, you know, the blood and things were amiss, they got him into, he was put in cuffs, but they heard further rustling in the woods. They kind of looked over, and Anthony Gamble, Joshua's brother, was running through the woods back towards the car, trying to make an escape for it. And he too was also covered in blood and had a pair of pockets in his, or sorry, had a pair of gloves in his pocket, not pockets in his pocket.
I was very confused for a second. I was like, what are those?
Yeah, a pair of pockets in your pocket? You don't have those?
No, I've never heard of those.
Okay. Well, the troopers had, not detained him, but I guess subdued him in a way. They brought him into custody as well, and then they kind of took a peek around at the other cars. And so inside the Audi, which had Florida plates, which this was in Pennsylvania, I believe, sorry, so the Florida plates also kind of stuck out to them.
Mm-hmm.
They found a substantial amount of blood, both in, like, really mainly in the passenger side and on the passenger floor of the car, but kind of elsewhere. And as they were looking further into it, near the Audi, they found the body of 26-year-old Kevin Rosero. And he had been murdered by the two of them less than an hour before they got caught. Because
oh
of
my God. Shit.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So essentially, they had just killed him and were, like, dropping the body, left the hazards on. Police found them within an hour, arrested them, and had them in custody.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is insane. Actually, really funny you talk with this case, because that case I found that I was like, I'm just going to write that up real quick, was this one.
Okay. Yeah. So this was that was, like, right off the bat, stupidity. Like, it's just kind of like a...
Like, who leaves their hazard lights on to dispose of a body?
Dispose of a body. Yeah.
Like, they need to practice road safety no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, good for them, I guess, for doing that. They had some hazards on.
If you're going to be parked on the side of the road with your hazards on, at least don't be covered in the blood of your victim so that you can be like, oh, sorry, I have a flat tire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Or laying on the forest floor hiding. Like, I feel like there's just ways to avoid suspicion.
Yeah.
Literally.
Especially maybe midnight, too.
Yeah. Like, least they could have done was, like, sit in their cars and be like, oh, hi, officers. Sorry. Yeah. We broke down. Or, like, come up with some excuse. Like, oh,
right,
God.
Right.
That's dummies.
So yeah, they found a cell phone inside of the Audi along with a large knife, which was found on the passenger floor, and that had been covered in blood. And on top of the car, troopers had found sanitizing wipes and then a second cell phone. So the Pennsylvania State Police later found out, like through investigation and whatnot, that the wet wipes were purchased from a nearby 7-Eleven only 20 minutes before the troopers had even gotten there. And a search on Anthony's phone had revealed like internet searches of 7-Eleven, junkyards near me, and can soap wash off fingerprints?
Really bright criminals there. I feel like they also were definitely not using incognito mode if it was that easy to find those results.
Right? Yeah, just not
like the first time I read can soap wash off fingerprints, I thought they meant like wash off their fingerprints on their hands, not wash off evidence. Fingerprints on the body. And it was so funny. I was like, no, you're so stupid, but it's still hilarious.
Yeah. So a search of his phone also revealed that there was a $400 transfer from the victim's Cash App account made at 11:20 p.m. on June 16th. So this was 43 minutes before the troopers spotted the two vehicles.
Oh.
So the Cash App transfer happened. And what they believe is that it was just like kind of a robbery gone wrong. I don't really know how, if it was through a Cash App transaction, but who knows? So the Cash App transaction happened 43 minutes, like 20 minutes before the Google searches about like 7-Eleven dumping a body, all of that. And then then they get caught and then they're in jail, basically, within the span of maybe an hour and a half.
That is a ridiculously fast turnaround for killing someone and being caught. Like, I think they might hold a record for that.
Definitely. But Rosero, the victim, and his parents are said to have come from Ecuador. And through interviews and like articles that I found, apparently he wanted to live a life of like helping people. And so he was actually an immigration lawyer, or like soon to be immigration lawyer. And all he wanted to do was just help immigrants and young adults become educated and pursue their dreams. So it really was a shame that he was taken this early, this soon.
Yeah.
And in November of 2022, though, Joshua Gamble pleaded guilty to robbery, conspiracy to commit robbery, theft, tampering with or fabricated. Wow. Okay. English. Robbery, conspiracy to commit robbery, theft, tampering with or fabricating physical evidence, and abuse of a corpse. Anthony Gamble pleaded guilty to murder in the third degree and criminal conspiracy to commit murder.
So was the transfer like through the Cash App account, wow, English, made before, like while Rosero was still alive, or was it made after he was dead, or do we
that
know?
I'm not positive about. I would think before, like I would think maybe they had him send it and then killed him, or maybe they killed him while he was opening up his Cash App stuff. I don't know. I don't know how easy it is to send a transfer to someone through Cash App. I forget that e-transfers, like interact e-transfer, isn't a thing in the States, I don't think, so I have no idea how Cash App works.
I assume it's basically the same as e-transfer, just not through your bank. That's what I assume.
Yeah So I don't know. I'm not positive, but from my understanding, the from death to them getting caught was like less than 2 hours.
That's wild.
Yeah. And so they had, during the autopsy, they had found that Kevin Rosero was stabbed 28 times in the upper body, including neck, face, chest, upper extremities. So it was a pretty aggressive stabbing, unfortunately. But Anthony was sentenced to 20 to 40 years in state prison for third-degree murder and an additional 5 to 14 consecutive years for a count of conspiracy to commit robbery. And Joshua, he was scheduled to be sentenced November 27th of 2023, but I couldn't find any updates as I was looking things up. So unless something's transpired in the past like couple of days since I looked this up, I think he's still waiting sentencing. Or it hasn't been reported. So maybe we'll hear an update at that point.
or I soon, didn't realize I guess. How recent this case was. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I missed that it happened in 2021. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So Joshua was 17 at the time, and then Anthony, his brother, was 19 at the time.
Oh, wow. They're quite young.
Yeah. And Joshua, I guess, was being tried as an adult, which is it Joshua that's then in November? Yeah. Which is could be why there's a delay to it. Legal proceedings. I don't know what happens. So, that's dumb criminal number one for you.
Wow. So that's a strong start.
Thank you.
Wow. Yeah. Their brains aren't fully developed yet. I know that, but like, come on, they got to have like seen some form of murder show to know that their actions were not the brightest.
Yeah, very much so. So I researched, the dumbest alibis that people use to get out of their crimes, and I came up with some golden ones.
Okay.
So the first one I'm going to tell you is a guy named Edward Eights, which is funny. You'll see why. He was accused of shooting and killing his former son-in-law in 2006. His lawyers argued that because he was nearly 300 pounds and had problems moving, it would be impossible for him to have committed the crime. So his defense's argument was that he was too fat to murder.
But it was a murder through shooting, was it not? Can you not sit and shoot someone?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm sure you can lift your arm out of bed enough, you know?
He had military experience, and he had researched how to kill people shortly before the murder, and he had his relatives lie to help out his alibi.
Oh, my God.
The court deemed him not fat enough to use obesity as an alibi and convicted him of murder.
What? That is wild. I can't. Oh my God.
How do you deem someone not fat enough to be deemed obese?
Yeah, you're not fat enough to use that as an excuse, so you're going to jail for murder.
Toss him on a scale, and that was his way of deciding?
Yeah, like who deems the weight. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was so funny, especially because his last name is Eights.
Yeah, he's been eating.
That's funny. He ate too much.
So did he end up getting charged? Do you know the outcome of that?
Yeah, he was convicted of murder.
Oh, yeah. I mean, rightfully so. He did murder the guy.
Yeah,
so.
That's fair. I would agree with that.
Yeah. Being fat doesn't excuse that. So.
Nah, dude. Like, you did it. Sorry about it.
Yeah.
And I saw pictures of him.
Alibi.
You're fine.
Of all things, I feel like you could get a little more crafty aside from using your weight as an excuse.
Right?
Yeah, right. And I feel like depending on how tall he was, like that's not even like, yes, it's overweight, but like if he was like 6'7" or 6'8", like that wouldn't even be out of the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Idiot. Oh my God.
If I were to expect someone using their weight as an alibi, I would expect someone on like that TLC show, My 600 Pound Life.
Yes.
Like incapable of lifting themselves out of bed.
Literally.
I agree.
Like, he'd help to move, but he didn't, is not what it sounded like.
Yeah.
And yeah. Like, I don't know. Too fat to murder.
Wow.
All right. I'll add that one to my list.
Too fat to murder.
Maybe it'll be real case law someday. Who knows?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So Journey, you said you were kind of looking at like alibis and stuff. I was kind of looking at, I remember we spoke like during forensics about like people trying to remove their fingerprints and why that's not actually terribly useful for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I found a couple cases that involve trying to remove your fingerprints.
I wondered why this guy's name looked familiar, but now I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think like we might have mentioned him in another episode about like it could have been like Al Capone or something like that. Because he was a gangster during like the Great Depression.
Oh.
Yeah. So John Dillinger was an American gangster in the Great Depression, as I just said. I'm sorry. He was the head honcho, basically, of the Dillinger Gang, which was accused of at least 28 robberies of banks and police stations. So he had a really lengthy rap sheet with the police, which included, obviously, multiple charges of bank robbery, assault, He also had assault of an officer and grand theft auto, and he had been in prison multiple times already, and even escaped prison at one point. Wow. So he was like a pretty successful criminal, especially for, you know, being like a gang leader. Mm-hmm. And he's actually also part of the reason that the FBI is what it is today, because J. Edgar Hoover, who was the director of the Bureau of Investigation, used Dillinger's success in organized crime to try to develop better and more complex investigative techniques, which ultimately led to the evolution of the FBI. That was off topic. I just thought it was really interesting while I was looking. Very cool. So anyways, in early June 1934, this is like after he's already escaped prison and been in prison multiple times, he attempted to remove his fingerprints, I guess, like so that he could go on to commit more crimes that maybe then those won't be detected by police, at least not connected to him. And he tried to do this first with a combination of hydrochloric acid and nitric acid, I believe they had said. But this one wasn't successful. So then he ended up trying to use lye to remove his fingerprints, which is another chemical compound. However, each time he did this, and like you have to imagine, like you have to burn your fingertips pretty severely with acid to not have fingerprints.
Yeah.
It still didn't work out for him. They just grew back, and they grew back identical to his other fingerprints.
That's funny.
And it didn't even help him out anyways, because literally less than a month later, he on June 22nd of 1934, he walked out of a movie theater and the FBI was there and he just went, "You got me." And then police shot him to death.
Oh, oh my gosh. Oh.
Yeah. Like his literal last words were, "You got me."
Oh, okay.
I feel I maybe wouldn't have shot him. I would have been like, "You're under arrest."
Yeah. Right. Like, why did they shoot him?
Literally. Okay.
Yeah. Not expecting that. Hard end.
I know, like the fingerprints didn't end up being terribly related to it. I just think it's funny, like after an entire life of crime, it was after like all was said and done, he was like, I think now I'll remove my fingerprints. And it didn't even help him in the slightest, but he was one of the first documented criminals to have attempted this, so that's kind of cool.
I wonder how like bad that would have hurt, because you've got to burn through several layers of your fingers, like the skin, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you have to get down to at least, I think, the dermal layer before anything is permanent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I've like
what really changes it is scarring them.
Yeah. And then by scarring them, you're just creating a more identifiable pattern.
You know?
Okay. Exactly. My next case that we'll talk about later is kind of about that.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm excited. Okay.
Okay. So yeah, you got fingerprints and we've got alibis. I just have stupid people. So coming back to, not to say that the others aren't, because they do. They are. But 2009, October of 2009, police received a call that two men with hooded sweatshirts and like masked painted faces or like dark faces had tried breaking into a man's home in Carroll, Iowa. They had a vehicle description that they were going off of too, because they had seen these two men flee or leave in this vehicle. So police ended up however many blocks away finding the car, stopping them. And when they kind of like rolled down the window, got them to chat with the police officers, rather than using like ski masks or stockings or literally anything else to cover their faces to try and prevent people from recognizing them, 23-year-old Matthew Allen McNelly and 20-year-old Joey Lee Miller used permanent marker to try and conceal their faces. Black permanent marker straight onto their skin.
So they just committed blackface to
try and prevent,
Were masks really that expensive?
Excellent question. That is an excellent, excellent question. I do believe quite a bit of alcohol was involved, which doesn't, like, excuse it. I don't know if it makes it better or worse, but yeah, the chief of police had told, like, a CNN that the disguises obviously made it fairly easy for the officers to kind of identify them and put two and two together.
Yep.
Well, can you imagine, like, running from the scene? You're, like, successful, like, whoa, we burglarized someone. And then, like, you're running down the street. You can't just take your mask off.
No.
Like, and they realize
it's a while to wash it off, too.
You're either having to use, like, rubbing alcohol or it's on there forever. Not ever, but, like, a very long time.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, I actually have some permanent marker on my hand right now, like, from writing on boxes. And, like, it went on, I think, like, yesterday morning. And, like, I've showered since then and it's mm-hmm. still there.
Mm-hmm. she's on there for a pretty good time. And
that's so funny.
But, yeah, the duo were charged with attempted burglary, and McNelly, the 23-year-old, was also charged with driving under the influence. But the county judge ultimately dismissed the attempted burglary charges, saying that there was insufficient evidence to support probable cause that the men committed the crime. So I guess there was no evidence that had shown that they had actually entered the apartment. Neither of them had a weapon. No one was injured, and I don't think anything was taken. But if you go to the next slide, I have a photo of what their mugshots look like.
Ooh, I can't wait. I love that.
I will post them to our website too, and maybe to our socials, because they've been dubbed like Dumb and Dumber. They're just...
Oh my God, they didn't even like fill their whole faces?
No.
I fully expected them to at least be like complete, like no skin color showing.
No, just a little... And they, like, you can tell too where their facial and actual hair is, that they just didn't bother with areas. So, like, the one is forehead, not even covered because his hair is covering it.
Buddy's got so funny
chin strap beard and didn't bother getting close to that.
The one on the left looks like Batman. Like, he tried to draw like the Batman helmet.
Yeah,
I would not.
Like,
be
you
surprised.
See, like, the little ears that he tried to draw.
Yeah, I really would not be surprised if that was what was going through his mind. Saying, like, I am Batman, laughing to himself as they're doing this in the mirror. Gonna rob these guys.
Oh, man, that's funny.
But yeah, Dumb and Dumber, part two.
Literally, I love that. Okay, my next alibi. So an Army Reserve soldier in Atlanta shot his superior officer because he was refused his vacation time request in 2009.
Oh, no.
So Staff Sergeant Rashad Valmont shot Master Sergeant Pedro Mercado 6 times, which killed him. He then drove to the police station and turned himself in.
What?
And so he had been ordered to lose 3% body fat in one day and claimed that the hunger and dehydration drove him to insanity. So he claimed he had like no control over his actions and didn't realize what he was doing.
Who told him to lose?
Yeah.
Why do you have to lose 3% body weight or body fat, whatever it was, in one day?
Like, the only reason I can think of that is for like a bodybuilder show. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, 'cause they kind of starve themselves right before, but... That is so weird. And also, starving yourself and dehydrating yourself for a single day.
Not
a single day. You are not going to go insane from that. Like, literally. People do that for Ramadan every year.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the judge was like, you can't claim hanger as an excuse to kill. You are going to life in prison.
Yeah.
Like, that's fair. I agree with that.
I stand by that decision as well.
Yeah.
I also can't imagine being so compelled to shoot my superior 6 times if I didn't get my vacation.
Yeah.
I'd be like, right. Okay. Like, that sucks, but I guess I'll put an extra, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's work.
So there had to have been something else going on there, because, like, he shot him and then immediately drove to the police station and turned himself in. Like,
that's
really
his mind.
That is the only thing that leads me to believe that he actually was insane. is that he like shot him and was like, oh, well, darn, guess I'll just make the police's job easier.
Yeah. I'll just go turn myself in.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I was like, brother, okay. What a guy.
Brother. Wow, that's wild. Okay. So I have another case about fingerprints. This one was slightly more successful. So Robert Phillips was a career criminal with multiple bank robberies and break-ins under his belt. he was actively serving a sentence in Alcatraz for bank robbery in 1932. And it was while he was there in 1932 that he devised a plan. He basically decided that once he's released from Alcatraz, he is going to try to remove his fingerprints so that he can keep committing crime, but it won't be connected to him anymore.
Right.
There's a actual, like, given, like, the fact that this was, like, an Alcatraz criminal, there was, like, a weird lack of information about this case. Like, if I, unless I am really bad at web searching, he doesn't even have a Wikipedia page, which is very uncommon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I don't even know, like, the length of his sentence at Alcatraz. But as of 1941, he was no longer in Alcatraz. And he went right back to committing burglaries and robberies basically all over the U.S. And important to note as well that because of his time spent in Alcatraz, Phillip's fingerprints were already in the National Fingerprint Database. So it was in 1941 that Phillips committed a burglary in North Carolina and then basically immediately fled to New Jersey because he had heard that there was a doctor in New Jersey named Dr. Leopold William Brandenburg that was interested in experimenting with fingerprint modification. I don't know if this doctor was in it for criminal intentions or just scientific, but either way, he was very excited to have a patient he could try to remove the fingerprints from.
How does that, like, get passed down the grapevine, too? Be like, hey, I know a guy. This is right? what he does. He's in fingerprint modification. Like, just the man I'm looking for. Okay.
I want to know that. Like, there is so little information that I could find about this. Like, how did you find out about this guy?
Yeah.
But yeah, so he met up with this guy and he was like, yep, let's do it. I am so down. So to remove Phillip's fingerprints, Brandenburg took a knife and sliced the skin off of each fingertip down to the dermal layer. So we were talking earlier, like, once you're down to the dermal layer, like, fingerprints don't come back. So they sliced all of the fingers off and then they also sliced little slits, almost like something you could put like something into in his chest, like over his ribs. And then they took the skinned fingers, attached them with tape to the skinned piece of chest, and then just left it there for 3 weeks.
Okay.
Well, so
was there a purpose for attaching the skin to the chest?
He was basically trying to he was basically trying to conduct a skin graft. So it wasn't even that it was only going to be scarring on his fingers. It was going to be like the skin from his chest on his fingers instead.
Putting chest skin on his fingers, though. Did I mishear that? Like, he just took skin from his fingers, put it on his chest, and then left it to heal?
Yeah, like, he basically, I'm gonna stand up for a sec. He basically, okay. His five fingers no longer had skin on only, like, the distal phalanges, so, like, top knuckle up. And then they sliced, like, five, like, holes almost in his chest, like, here.
Okay, I'm following.
And then they took the hand and, like,
put it on his chest, like, rested his
his chest and then taped his hand to his chest so it couldn't move.
I see.
And then 3 weeks later, the skin had kind of fused together, like the fingerprints in the chest. So then they basically just detached his hand from his chest, like, they just cut the skin so that there was new skin. And then they were like, hey, that worked out pretty well. And then they did it to his left hand because they only did it once at a time.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, I like he would have no hands for 6 weeks if they didn't, like, do it that way.
Walking around in a skin straitjacket.
Yeah.
Really? What if someone tried to tickle him? He wouldn't be able to.
Yeah. Oh, that would be like my worst fear in that situation.
Literally. Oh, that was so wild that was how they did that. Like, I definitely would cut the skin off the chest and put it on the finger
fusing
the fingers to the chest.
Yeah, right. Like, I think it's something to do with blood flow, like, to make sure like the skin doesn't die, but still, like, that's such a weird procedure. But anyways, it actually did work. So it left him with smooth pink fingertips. It looked a lot like scar tissue. And it was within the same year. So he no longer has fingertips. He has weird chest fingers. He was pulled over by police in Texas and ultimately arrested because Phillips had failed to provide driver's license or any other forms of identity to the police. And Phillips at the time, because he had no ID, told police that his name was Roscoe Pitts. And so they took him to the station, processed his fingerprints under the name Roscoe Pitts and put it into the system. But even though, like, yeah, they did remove the fingertips, there was still a little bit of the ridges left on, like, the very bottom of the upper phalange, like, almost where the knuckle is. Mm-hmm. And then also on the sides of the fingers. Yeah. Like, okay. It's like they only did, like, the perfect center of his finger. Mm-hmm. So basically on the fingerprint sheet, it was, like, a blank, like, blank ink blotch, and then a little tiny bit of fingerprint all around.
Yeah. Wow. Because, well, when they fingerprint, when you get fingerprinted, you have to do, like, the full rolling, right? So you get the sides, you get the bottom, and you get the top.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so, like, I don't know why they didn't think about that. But anyways, because there's still a little bit, they tried to use the outer bits of the fingerprint as well as, like, the middle phalange fingerprint, and they compared it to people on the FBI's most wanted list. But at the time, Phillips wasn't on the most wanted list, so they had no luck identifying him. I'm really unsure about the next part of this timeline. I think it was something to do with a robbery that Roscoe Pitts was believed to have committed, because by this point, there was multiple Roscoe Pitt files. One, something or another happened, and Phillips' girlfriend told police that, basically said, oh yeah, my boyfriend traveled to New Jersey to try to have his fingerprints erased not too long ago.
Oh my gosh.
So the police, of course, tracked down the doctor who did it, Dr. Brandenburg, and then showed him a picture of who they thought was Roscoe Pitts. And then the doctor was like, oh yeah, that's Robert Phillips. I removed his fingerprints.
That's yeah, I know that guy.
Funny. Yeah.
Our client.
Yeah, so then the FBI obviously used this new name, Robert Phillips, to compare Roscoe Pitts' fingerprints, and of course, everywhere they did have of the prints was a perfect match, or as perfect as it can be. Mm-hmm. So he was ultimately charged with whatever crime he was on the run for at the time, and after which he ended up spending the rest of his life in prison, where he actually also died. Wow. So, yeah, so I would say it was more of, like, his girlfriend and the doctor's fault that he was found.
Yeah.
I love that still, they just, like, collectively worked against him.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, my boyfriend the criminal? Yeah, no, he totally just got his fingers removed over there. And he totally would want me to tell the police this.
Yeah, right?
I'm like, the police, too, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, how much were the police paying you? Or yeah, how much do you not like your boyfriend?
Yeah. Or exactly. How dense do you have to be?
True.
How many brain cells do you have?
It's wild to me that they, like, go through this trouble to remove their fingerprints. And then, like, whether or not it works, they still continue to commit crimes, and then they get caught, and then they're just new non-fingerprints are in the system.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It didn't save them any trouble, like, because they're just back where they started, except now they can't change anything.
Yeah, like, I feel like the only way to get away with it would be, like, commit one crime with fingerprints.
Yeah.
And then remove your fingerprints, and maybe commit one more crime if you're successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then stop.
Leave it at that.
And just be done with it.
Or yeah, wear gloves. Maximum two crimes.
Yeah. You get two crimes out of your fingerprints.
Yeah.
Use them wisely.
I will post these pictures as well on our website, but just the one underneath shows a newspaper article from the time, which shows, like, a picture of his fingers, as well as him in a creepy portrait showing off the scars on his chest that his hands were attached to.
I see. Yikes. I was so confused. I, for, like, 100% thought he had just, like, cut the skin off of his fingers. put them in little skin flaps, like the little skin pieces in skin flaps in his chest, and then taped the skin flaps over and just had his hand like to heal. I was like, I'm not following the graphic.
Yeah, it's like okay, but cutting off the finger just makes sense, but why are we putting them in his chest?
Why is this? Yeah. I see now, though. That is such an eerie photo.
It is. I know. I do not like that at all.
Well, this even the picture, like, of his fingers, like, I can't tell which way his hands are facing.
Totally. Yeah. Like, that, like the way that they're scarred almost looks like nails. Like, a nail bed.
Ooh, yeah. I didn't even think of that. Gross.
It's yucky.
Gross. Yeah, I don't like it.
Okay. Well, stupidity number three for me. This one's a short one because there wasn't really... Anyways, so in 2013, 22-year-old Derek Mosley, he had made the decision that he wanted to up his weapons game and get the new best thing, I guess, best weapon. He decided to rob a discount gun sales shop in Beaverton, Oregon. And he figured robbing it would be the easiest way to obtain this weapon, I guess. The only thing is he came into this gun store with only a baseball bat and a knife to rob this shop. So when he shattered the glass display and grabbed one of the handguns, the store manager just drew out his personal gun that was loaded and held him and just said, get on the ground. So Derek Mosley got on the ground and waited for the cops to come as the store manager just held his crosshairs on him.
Like, I love that. Right? How dumb do you have to be to not think that they will use a gun against a burglar in a gun store?
In a gun store.
Literally.
In the States, yeah. And so when Washington County deputies arrived on the scene, they had just, like, found him lying on the floor with the shop owner having, like, with a gun to him. But he was charged with first-degree robbery and unlawful possession of a firearm. And I would just love to have been a fly on a wall in that shop during the span between the shop owner drawing his gun out and the police getting there. Because I'm like, are they just chatting away? Buddy's lying on the ground. Like, attempted robbery did not go well. And the manager's like, what a fool.
Literally, if I was a store manager, I'd be like, What the hell were you thinking?
Yeah.
Like, you're like, what did you expect to happen here?
You try to rob me with a baseball bat and a knife, and I work at a gun store, and you don't expect that I have a gun on my person?
Yeah. And even if it's not on my person, you are in a store full of guns. So what?
And I'm sure it's also full of ammo if it's full of guns. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, wow. That's so funny. Are you stupid? Yeah. You have to be. Yeah. Okay. The next alibi. This one is funny. They're all funny. But Alan Biankowski was accused of killing a man because they found bloodstains on his shoes. He was familiar with the crime area, and he was also familiar with the hammer that was used as a murder weapon to kill the person. And so I think when they use the word he was familiar with means like he had the hammer, like that was his hammer kind of thing. And so even with this evidence, he claimed that he didn't do it because he was too busy doing heroin.
Oh, okay.
He said,
I guess like incriminate yourself for a lesser crime and hope for the best.
They were like, not only is your alibi not true, it is also full of so many illegal things. It does not help your case at all.
I feel like you could also have one and the other at the same time, which probably is just going to go against him. You can be on heroin and commit these acts.
Well, like I'd almost argue you have even less of a clear mind to make rational decisions if you're actively on heroin, you know?
Exactly. And so like his timeline of events for that day or whatever is he got up at 5:30 in the morning to snort heroin, which I didn't know you could snort heroin, but apparently you can.
I didn't either.
I googled, can you snort heroin? And the first thing that showed up was like drug addiction helpline. Like, yeah, that's okay. Fair. That's fair. Yeah. I'm asking for a friend.
First fetish aprons and now how to snort heroin.
Hopefully no one gets a hold of you. Yeah. Yeah, so he got up early in the morning to snort heroin. He checked on a vending machine. I don't know why. Okay. He walked his dog and then he used some more heroin.
I feel like I would... I mean, addiction's different, but I feel like I would not want to snort heroin before walking my dog. I feel like that would just be unenjoyable.
But I guess, like, if you are addicted to it, it would be hard to get out of bed in the morning without it, I would imagine.
Yeah. That's fair. It's just really unfortunate that, like, he did kill this person. I'm sure, like, he actually was the person. But, like, if this was genuinely an alibi, he actually was innocent. And, like, say he had someone else with him also using, they can't corroborate his alibi because they wouldn't be reliable.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, in a court of law. So, like, he's kind of...
unreliable witnesses.
Yeah, like, he's kind of shit out of luck, like, both ways.
Yeah.
I was going to use a different expletive, but that one was a little friendlier.
I was just like, okay.
Did he set an alarm to wake up at 5:30, or is that just like his body woke him up at 5:30 and he's like, well, I'm up, may as well.
I don't know, like, I struggle to wake up at 5:30, but maybe I'm just not doing enough drugs to get up early enough, you know.
This is true.
So things to
you
think
can
about.
Always test it out and see.
Exactly.
Report back.
Will not be doing that. Yeah, that's a stupid alibi.
Hey, I was on drugs.
Oh my gosh. Like, what an alibi. I just have no words for that. That's wild.
Sorry, I couldn't tell someone. I was doing heroin.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay. Tell me more about that.
Add this
then
onto the charge.
Exactly. Possession of drugs.
Okay. So, this is my last case. And this one isn't about fingerprints. It just made me laugh. Okay. So, in September 23, a man whose name I could not find was driving on the highway at night in Nebraska when he called the police to report that he had just been passed by someone driving on the wrong side of the road who came really close to hitting him. So, like, they kind of had to swerve out of the way. So on the phone, like, he told the police the best description of the car he could. I think he said it was like a red truck. And he basically, like, was trying to say, like, he's just calling, like, he's not hurt or anything, but he just wants to make sure, like, the police are aware of it to maybe, like, stop him so they don't hurt people. So quite shortly after the call, like, I don't think it was any more than like 10 minutes, the same man who called 911 was pulled over by police on the highway. And in body cam footage from the police, you can hear them ask if the man knows why he was pulled over, to which he said, yeah, because I'm on the wrong side of the road. And then the police asked him why he was on the wrong side of the road. And he said, I don't know. I think I must have missed an exit or something. So then the officer asked if he was the same one who just called the police about a car on the wrong side of the highway, to which he confessed he was. He was that one.
Oh my gosh. Was he just like, I did an oopsies. I should tell them that I did this, but not do anything about it.
Well, I think when he called, he genuinely didn't know that he was in the wrong.
Oh. Yeah.
But obviously, okay, like, police were like, okay, something's up if he didn't know that. So they did a field sobriety test and it determined that his blood alcohol concentration was over double the legal limit.
That'll do it.
Yeah. That's that whole case. That just really made me laugh.
I love that he's just like, I didn't do anything wrong. Someone else was driving on the wrong side of the road. Like, I'm in the right here. They just about hit me. How dare they? And then the police are like, brother, you are on the wrong side of the road.
You are the one that almost hit someone going the wrong way.
You are in the wrong here. And he's like, no, I know I'm on the wrong side of the road. How dare they not move for me?
The first link on my case study, if you guys wanted to watch it at some point, is part of the body cam footage of, like, when the police approach him. So that's fun.
That's amazing. Okay.
I love this. Okay. I have one more as well. This one kind of reminded me of a case you had told me about, Rebecca, about people implicating themselves. And so,
okay,
on September 18th, 2021, police responded to a call for a man who had suffered from a gunshot wound to the head in his own apartment. I don't know if it was like his personal apartment or an apartment complex, like where exactly in this apartment it happened. But this gentleman had been shot in the head. And when police arrived there, 32-year-old Randall Wallace was pronounced dead at the scene. Police initially thought that Wallace had been in an argument with three other individuals before he was shot. This was kind of during the initial investigation of it all. And witnesses had come forward saying they saw a black man fleeing the scene in a white vehicle. Now, Ken Juan McDaniel was already on probation for shooting four people inside a mall in 2018. Sorry, shooting at four people. He did not shoot four people. He shot at four people.
Okay, still yikes, but not a, yikes. Not as big yikes.
Still yikes. And so he had pleaded guilty to a lesser charge of ownership of a firearm as a prohibited person. So he was kind of like on the police radar at this time. Early investigations in 2021. Almost 2 years later, though, in August 2023... police arrested Ken Juan McDaniel on a charge of open murder with a deadly weapon in relation to this 2021 murder. And I guess open charge of murder, I had not heard of that before or heard of it. In Nevada, this means that a jury basically decides whether he's charged with first, second, or manslaughter. And if manslaughter, involuntary or voluntary.
Oh, that's
interesting. So it's just kind of like, you decide, up to you guys.
Huh. Do they use like a grand jury for that, or is it still just like a 12 people jury that decides charges? That's interesting.
That's an excellent question. I do not know. I was under the assumption just like a regular jury, but I could be wrong in that.
We'll look into it.
Yeah, we'll look into it. But McDaniel had been considered a person of interest, apparently, as I had mentioned, but not so much because of his previous charges, but I guess there was a connection between him and the vehicle that matched like the getaway car that witnesses reported. So he was kind of already on the radar because of this car. But in July of 2023, a detective noticed that McDaniel had posted a music video on YouTube. This was a rap titled Fatty Free. And F-A-D-E-E, Fatty Free. And so they looked a bit deeper into this video and the lyrics associated with it. Because he was kind of on their radar. They were keeping tabs on him. Detectives said, though, that the details that McDaniel was rapping about were incredibly similar to details of Wallace's murder that had not been released to the public. It also did help the fact that apparently he also confessed to the murder in this rap. He was like, confessed to the murder. And so it really did help the detectives build a case. One lyric that included details that hadn't been publicly released, which I have a hard time seeing this or hearing this and being like, yeah, this guy killed this specific person in 2021. He went to say, parked the car, double back on feet, the smartest way to slide, drove in, double lock yo man, make sure you get yo bod.
I like that. They're very sophisticated lyrics.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I kind of like slam poetry pronounce that. I'm sure it came out better in the video, but yeah, he parked the car, doubled back, and then drove back in, locked him up. But in the warrant, I guess it also noted that McDaniel also reenacted elements of the killing that were, quote, consistent with evidence at the scene, end quote. I don't really know what that means.
Yeah, like, was it a music? Like, did he do a music video?
It was a music video.
It was.
Okay. Let me pop that link in here real quick, because it is still on YouTube, and the comments are quite hysterical.
Nice.
Some of the comments that I were reading were just, like, bars so fire they got him behind them or something like that. They landed him behind them.
It's even solid. Better than the actual lyrics.
Yeah. But another lyric then too that apparently implicated McDaniel was McDaniel. I don't know why I'm adding a D to the end of his last name. McDaniel was that, quote, "I believe the reason why he's dead, we still taunt him when he die." Oh, sorry, no. "I be the reason why he's dead. We still taunt him when he die, not the reason he's dead. So celebrate the reason why his mama cry."
I'm like, savage.
I don't understand how that's implicating him, though, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Obviously, the police know more about the case, but, like, I feel like there's a lot of raps about murder that could almost sound like even more specific than these lyrics to like a case, and they're not charged.
Agreed. And so I will say that the case, they had to like clearly say that the case wasn't built around the contents of the music video, but the video further corroborated that word, the facts and results obtained during their investigation. But I'm curious how this trial is going to go, considering this was July of 2023. So like, it's still kind of in the works, but I guess cases in the past have noted that like using lyrics against rappers apparently steps on First Amendment protections, or it just, you can't really see lyrics as fact, as fictional writing in a way.
Yeah.
Or a non-fictional writing.
I know we spoke about that in a class in university, and I do not for the life of me remember what course it was, so I don't remember if either or both of you were in it with me.
I think so.
Yeah, we spoke about like oh my god, I cannot think of the words for this. We were talking about like one specific research experiment done that was talking about like they gave a group of people lyrics by Johnny Cash and lyrics by like a rapper, but they disassociated the genre and the name from them and just asked people to say like, what ethnicity do you think wrote this song? Do you think this song or this song is more violent? And like the answers changed significantly when they knew the ethnicity of the rapper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they saw Johnny Cash and like other, I think at least that they saw them as more like violent or more rap like than the rap songs.
Yeah.
They just kind of like brought them all in together. And yeah. Crazy.
That was a crazy study. I want to look into that again. I do not remember what class that was.
Could it have been in it, if that helps?
No. Okay. So psychology Stinson?
It could have been
law? No, you were in psych and law,
Jeremy. I was in psych and law, yeah.
Could it have been advanced psych and law?
Yeah,
I think
I wish I did though.
Okay. Yeah. I think it might have been advanced psych and law.
Because, yeah, then we were talking, I guess, after that, it kind of led into the discussion of credibility of song lyrics and, like, using or taking song lyrics out of context as a form of evidence in trial. And they're like, well, Johnny Cash is apparently a serial murderer and killer and all these things, but we know he's not. So
yeah, well, but it's country music, so it's not the same.
There's just a creative license that they use for, and like, yes, some might be true, but not all of them are.
Yeah, exactly.
It was also, I'm so outside of the realm of pop culture, but what didn't something like this happen with Bobby Shmurda, I think he's called? Do you remember any of that?
I am also very outside their own pop culture when it comes to Bobby Shmurda, but I know this was happening in like 2016 and there was a big like free Bobby and stuff like that. And I think you're right. Like, I think they might have used his lyrics to implicate him in,
I don't know,
like a drive-by shooting or something like that.
Yeah.
I could be completely wrong. Like you said, like, I don't know anything about that case. I just remember seeing the hashtags.
Free Bobby. So I guess there's been previous cases about using lyrics as evidence, so I don't know what will come of this case or how it'll go down, but hopefully we find out. Hopefully there's updates. I don't know, we're probably going to have to wait another 2 years before there's any movement in the legal system.
Yeah, true. We have such a great backlog everywhere.
That's neither here nor there.
Yeah. Well, even in Canada, like, we don't have a First Amendment. Like, we don't have a freedom of speech.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
I learned recently. Yeah. I was like, oh, cool. Love to see it. I don't really care, but whatever. Okay, I've got four more alibis.
Okay, I'm ready.
They're all short. Do you want me just to speed through them?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hit them with us. Hit us with them. No.
Anyway. No one for this one. So, speaking of hitting people with things, Ethan Couch was having a party in 2013, and he decided to drive drunk to the store.
Idiot.
He played chicken with vehicles on the way and didn't slow down when he came across a stalled SUV with people standing around it. So he ran right into them, killed four people, and injured many more.
They were on the side of the road, and he just kept driving into them?
Yeah.
Oh.
How drunk was that? Holy shit, that's wild. Okay.
I think he was very intoxicated. Okay. He like fled the scene, but was caught and then brought to court. And his lawyers legitimately claimed that he was not at fault for killing these people because he was too rich and sheltered to know that what he was doing was wrong.
No fucking way.
Okay, no, you can be as rich as you want.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like you could be like the richest person on Earth's kid and probably still know that murder is bad.
Literally. You just have to be like a human to know that kind of. Don't do that.
Yeah, just don't take someone's life, you know?
Literally. And the judges called this affluenza.
Mm, yep.
And he was like afflicted with affluenza syndrome or whatever.
Oh my God.
Isn't real. And so the judge bought it and was like, yeah, no, 100%. Here's 10 years of probation and time in a rehab facility.
Are you serious? For killing four people? Like, for running down four people?
Mm-hmm.
Holy fuck. I actually, like, that's entitlement at its finest.
That judge isn't still working, but I'm sure they are.
Dude, money gets you out of some insane things, and it shouldn't.
So backwards. So backwards. Oh my God.
It makes me so mad. So yeah, speaking of hitting things with people or whatever. okay. And then in 2002, Tonda Lynn Ainslie started to think that she was living in the Matrix.
Cool.
And her landlord was giving off evil vibes because she wasn't really her landlady. So Ainslie decided to kill her.
Was she also on heroin? She snorting heroin at 5:30 in the morning as well?
Yeah, chance? Perhaps.
Perhaps. Okay.
You're a heroin guy or like soulmates.
Yeah.
She shot her in the head, and then she was at trial. She explained that she wasn't really there and it wasn't really a crime because she was in the Matrix the whole time, so none of it actually happened.
And
she did successfully plead insanity and was sent to a mental care facility instead of jail.
Okay.
I was gonna say, like, this sounds a lot like paranoid schizophrenia.
But apparently there were other cases like that that weren't as lucky and they were actually like charged with murder.
I wonder if it was during the time when Matrix was really big and coming out and everyone was like in the thrall of it all. And
I don't know.
Everything's a simulation. So
it seems to be a common affliction. So I'm like,
it's crazy how much of a hold that movie had on society. Like,
I haven't seen it.
I think I started it and then my brain hurt like midway through trying to understand what was happening. I was like, I just need to turn this off.
Yeah, I've seen it. It was a movie. I've only seen the first one. Okay. That's all I could really handle. I understand why it was big for its time, but like it doesn't hold its weight today. Like Inception is way better.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Funny side tangent about Inception that's so irrelevant to this. The first like five times I tried watching that movie, never got through it. Not because I didn't want to get through it, it just didn't happen. Like, first time I went to theaters, the movie cut out in theaters and it just stopped playing. What? So, wow. So we got a refund back for that. We tried watching it again. I think it was like on some streaming platform. Just stopped streaming halfway through. Couldn't finish it. And, like, consecutively kept happening. I think I fell asleep during the third or fourth time too. But I had tried so hard to watch that movie and it just did not want me to finish it.
That is so weird that it happened to that movie in particular multiple times.
Of all movies, it's Inception. I finished it thankfully now, but
thank God.
It was, I was so pissed off. It's like, of all movies, this is what's happening.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Okay, so this one I also find interesting. So Nina Reiser disappeared in September of 2006 and her estranged husband, Hans Reiser, was very helpful to investigators. But as the case progressed, it became obvious that he was the one who had killed her. But he claimed he didn't really do it because he had no control over his actions because he was a programmer and had a detached view of the world and wasn't even sure he killed her because he was a genius and just too smart to think that he could kill someone.
This also sounds like a dude. I was going to say, is this another dude that thinks he's in the Matrix because he's a programmer? Oh. He's like, I am like a higher wavelength.
Literally. This could be a Matrix affluenza infected folk. He's got both.
Oh my God.
He thinks he's
double
better than
whammy.
Everyone.
Wow.
Yeah. Top 10 people I never want to meet. So he submitted a thesis in an attempt to prove that it was just as likely that his estranged wife was in Russia or that he had been so wrapped up in coding that he wouldn't know what he was doing to explain her disappearance. And his lawyers claimed that only geniuses could truly understand his thesis. So the jury and the judge just had to, they had no hope of understanding it. So they just had to take his word for like how true it was.
But they were just essentially belittling the judge and jury, being like, I'm smarter than all of you, actually.
Yeah, they're so. Like, you're actually too stupid to understand this. So you just have to believe it.
That might be one of the worst.
Like, you want them on your side. You want those folk on your side.
Like, I think that's even worse than the affluenza one. Because, like, this one, he's just like, I did write something in my defense, but, like, you wouldn't even understand. So just let me go. You know? Like, I'm just too smart for this.
I'm too smart. Yeah. So next time you're in trouble with the law, just claim you're too smart.
Write a thesis for
it. I actually don't know what happened at the end of this case. I just couldn't believe it.
I hope he was charged.
I
hope so. Yeah.
Okay, and this one, tying in a little bit to our next episode.
Okay.
In 1991, Jane Gill was found dead in her apartment, and her business partner, Gary Joseph Rasp, was charged with the murder. So Rasp claimed that Jane's African gray parrot, Max, had seen someone else do it because he was heard saying, "Don't shoot," and "Richard, no, no, no," after the murder. And so Rasp claimed that African grays are one of the most intelligent types of parrot. And so his lawyers tried to call the bird as a witness at the trial. And the judge was like, "No, I'm not calling a parrot witness stand. Are you insane?"
What? My God. I've actually heard about, I assume this was the case I heard about involving a parrot mimicking a murder. Because if that happened twice, like, that's wild.
Right?
We should all own parrots in case they need to be an alibi.
Fun fact, I used to own a parrot. I had a parrot as a pet for...
Did you really? I didn't know that.
But we've had a plethora of animals at my mom's house. His name was Knickers. It looked like he wore pants. And he would sit on your hand and you would go bang and he would drop down.
And that is so sweet. Aww.
I love that.
That is so crazy, though. And also, I would be inclined to let the bird on stand. I'd like to know what he says.
Yeah, I'd be
what
curious.
What does the bird have to say?
Honestly, I'd be curious if he could actually answer back, though. You know what I mean? Like, if you asked him a question, or is it just a mimic of a response?
Well, I'm pretty sure parrots don't, like, can't understand and answer questions. Like, they can only, like, mimic. But I also don't know for sure.
I have seen videos lately on TikTok of like this one bird in particular that like the owner is training him to identify stuff. So like he's like, "What is this?" And he goes, "Rock." And it's a rock. Or it's like he taps something that's glass and they're like, "What's that?" And he's like, glass. Sometimes he still says it's a rock or something else, but yeah. It feels a little like a guessing game for the bird, but I mean, like, I'm sure it's mentally stimulating.
Yeah, right?
Just pure enrichment.
So wild. So Rasp was found guilty of the crime.
Yeah.
And Max, the parrot, was relocated after the trial.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
I hope he went to a good home.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Poor guy.
Yeah. But I am curious why he said, Richard, no, no, no.
Yeah, and don't shoot. Like, to me, like, that would honestly be somewhat convincing evidence. I'm not going to lie. Like, I would consider that.
How would a bird know that, though? A bird doesn't know to just say, don't shoot. So it's probably been, like, said before in the past multiple times.
Well, he could have got it from a TV show, or Rasp could have worked with him to say don't shoot and say someone else's name, or like it could have actually come from the murder, right? Like, who knows?
I honestly didn't consider any other angle. I was like, oh man, this parrot just heard a murder.
He's experienced some trauma.
Oh boy.
Literally.
Yeah, so those are all the fun alibis that I found.
Those were a lot of fun. Well, thank you both for these.
All of
and
us.
You, thank you. That's very kind. Thank you, all of us, for our all of the different cases that we were able to find. There were so many more that I'm sure all of us, like, if there was more time, could speak about. So I don't know. If people like this, maybe in the future we'll do another one, because honestly, I had a lot of fun with this.
Mm-hmm.
Same. But with that being said, before we get on to the outro, I know that Journey has another forensic corner for us, and I am very excited to hear it.
Yeah, it's good.
Is it forensics or is it a fun life, super random, tether us down?
Forensic-y.
Okay.
Oh.
So there is a murder zone in Yellowstone National Park where it is like technically legal to murder.
What?
Yeah, it's also That's known scary. As the zone of death.
Ooh. I mean, rightfully so.
Literally. Okay. So there's a 50 square mile section in Yellowstone National Park where someone can get away with murder and other crimes. And in 2005, a Michigan State University law professor, Brian Cult, discovered this loophole while he was researching jurisdictions for the article he was writing.
Okay.
And so Yellowstone National Park, like all national parks, are federal property. So if someone commits a crime there, it falls under federal jurisdiction. And under the Sixth Amendment, a person accused of a crime has the right to a jury trial where jurors are residents from the state and federal district where the crime occurred.
State and federal district. Okay.
So it's like jury of your peers, but from where the murder happened. And so there's a stretch in the Yellowstone National Park that crosses parts of Wyoming, Idaho, and Montana. And so if someone was to commit a murder on this piece of land, the crime would take place like in Idaho, but under Wyoming's discretion or something. And so because it's unpopulated there, there are no jury members living in the area, so no jury trial can take place. So they can't actually charge them with anything because it violates their Sixth Amendment to a trial.
Wow.
What they
that
could
is
they,
so
I mean,
weird.
Right?
I understand like the amendment aspect, but could they not just get jury members from the other states or closer states? Because I feel like, remember, like any high profile case, there's the option or chance or whatever to pull jury members from outside who don't know what's going on and don't know the case details.
Yeah.
So could they not, or is it because they don't have anything to start with, they can't pick out?
They don't have anything to start with.
Yeah. And so, I guess this is kind of like similar sort of thing as like international waters. Like they say, like, oh, if you commit a crime in international waters, like you'll get off scot-free sort of thing. Like, I feel like it's like that. It's just weird that there's a section of the US that's like that.
And so he like brought this forward to lawmakers and was like, hey,
by the way,
we need to do something about this. And they were like, nah, it's good. And like one of his things was like, we should make it so that it's covered by Montana because there's people living in Montana within the area. So they could actually have a jury trial. And they
were
just
like, makes sense.
Yeah. They're like, no.
Like, less work. We'll just let everything happen. Have there been, do you know, reported deaths and murders and what for the area? Or is it in the middle of nowhere? I
heard of was someone poached an elk.
Oh,
and okay. He brought this up at trial, but he was like on the Montana side or whatever, so he was they still prosecuted him or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he brought it up at trial and was like, you can't actually do this because of the loophole, and they were like, we don't we do what we want. Yeah. Kind of thing.
Huh. That is so interesting. I can't believe there's somewhere in the United States like that.
Right?
Huh. And I wonder, like, because we haven't heard about crimes coming out of that, like, I'm wondering if it's just because it's not monitored because it's this zone, or if it's just, like, they all get thrown out because it's this zone.
Well, and it's, like, how many people know that it's there, how easy is it to access, like...
Yeah, like, I can't imagine, like, being in the absolute middle of Yellowstone National Park would be very easy to get to.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You're, like, bordering three different states.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, like, it's pretty deep in there.
If you're getting in there and it's a multiple day hike kind of thing, I'm not going to want to try and commit a crime, let alone murder or anything, to then hike back and hope.
I feel like even if you do commit a crime there, like you hike out with someone that you want to murder, planning goes into that. So I feel like you could still be prosecuted once you're home.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
I mean, murder is a federal crime.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have a federal way to prosecute, I guess. I don't know. It was so weird. And I was like,
yeah, that is super interesting, though. And actually, like, forensic related. That's super cool. Fun forensic corner.
Right. I found it when I was looking for my alibis.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Journey. That was a really fun forensic corner, and I really hope that no one with ill intentions listens to our podcast. But with that being said, our next topic is going to be on wildlife forensics, which, as Journey said, a man killed an elk in the Yellowstone danger zone. So I don't suggest you do that. You might be investigated through wildlife forensics. And with that being said, people can find us, if you would like to know more about our podcast or find any information, on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook, all at What the Forensics. Or you can find us on Twitter or X, whatever you would like to call it, at WT Forensics PC. All of our information, though, if you want to be able to contact us or find the forensic corners that we talk about, is on our website at whattheforensics.ca. Finally, if you want to contact us directly, you can send us an email at whattheforensics@gmail.com. So yeah, this has been another episode of What the Forensics. Before we go, if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to leave a review. It really helps us out, not only with learning what you guys enjoy, but also within everyone's algorithms. Mm-hmm. And we would love to read your reviews and your comments. And if you guys have any suggestions or concerns or just fun things you want to say, then throw them in there. So
constructive criticism, though. Don't be mean.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't
please be mean. Please be kind. Like, if you're going to be mean, do a compliment sandwich. That would be appreciated. But with that being said, this has been another episode of What the Forensics. Thank you for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be seeing you next time.
Bye. Just a reminder to everyone that we are not professionals in the forensic science field. We are just interested in forensics and want to share what we are learning with our listeners. We're trying to give you the most accurate information, but we are human and can make mistakes. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to see you next week.